Thanks, Lori. So now Lori told you how to give a good presentation, educate everybody, so you can point out where I fail here. But what she didn't, like she said, what she didn't do, and I'm going to pick on her because we're good friends, she didn't know how to keep time, so she took 10 minutes of my time. Yep, look at the clock there. So I'm going to have to hurry through. Y'all don't get a break, one of the two. No comment. So, full disclosure on this presentation, first off, none of this data is yet in the Fieldprint calculator. There are plans to put some of it in there. We're working on that. Like I said, it's sitting there. It's a two-year project that I'm kind of reporting on now that we've been working on. And it started, well, I'll just jump into it. So, why not? So, in 2017, we decided it's kind of time to pursue an in-depth home farm irrigation management strategy. So, and I say that, it's critical to agricultural success in Georgia because I'm a Georgia Extension Specialist. But when we look, it's critical all across the nation. This can be applied everywhere. And I guess full disclosure, we've had meetings with Cotton Oil Incorporated and some of our industry partners that you're going to get to see on some of the panels later of setting this up where we can start doing something similar across the, across the entire nation in certain states. So just keep that in mind that, I'm talking from Georgia perspective because we've kind of piloted this program, but it is something that we plan to expand to other states. And I guess one other thing I should throw a pitch in with it is a very, very similar talk to what I'm giving you here is available on the Plant Management Network, a little bit longer, and you don't get the benefit of seeing me standing in front of you for what that's worth. But feel free if you want some more information in depth on this. It is at the Plant Management Network's website. It was recorded that way. So either way, one of our critical issues in Georgia right now is that we're in the middle of a Supreme Court case between Florida and Georgia where Georgia's actually being sued over agricultural water use, and the Supreme Court has pointed out that agriculture is one of the, or tried to say that that's one of the big culprits in it. So we're trying to show that we are sustainable from the perspective of water use, and we have tools available to our producers and have producers that are using those tools to become more sustainable in the state. So we've formed a team of 16 faculty members to help address the problem, and that team is relatively large across disciplines. And what I would say, we're trying to find a solution to the problem or approaching the problem from field production standpoints. We're working with some of our agents. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. Looking at irrigation scheduling, engineering in general, economics, education, and then social science perspectives. So, our goal is to look at it from that all-around approach so that not only do I say, all right, by putting this sensor in, you can save this much water, you can become this much more water use efficient on the farm, because we do a lot of that already in our research there at Georgia, and a lot of other researchers across the nation do that and show what the benefit of these are. We want to show, all right, so you can do this. So what are the other aspects of this? Why are we not adopting these at a higher level across our state? And what do we need to change and what do we need to do to make that happen? How do we need to cater our tools so that it's easier for farmers to use, et cetera? So, again, I want to give you this background, and this is out of Georgia. This comes from our economists there. Your state may be a little different, so I'd encourage you, to kind of look that up around. I've heard different numbers of different states, but my point is that even though our water is free, we're pulling from surface or well waters, we're paying to move that water. So I think that's something that a lot of times some of our producers may miss is that energy cost. It's not directly tied to a production cost. And so if you just want an idea, on average, it's $9.75 an acre inch applied. And hopefully all y'all understand what that is. That's per inch on per acre of land. We're basically spending $10 to move that water and energy cost. And that's comprised of a 50-50, $7 per acre inch for electric. And that's relatively stable. Usually electric is. Outside of rate schedules and stuff, I understand that. There's certain times we can't pump. When we look at diesel, however, I've got a little caveat there. When I started this position in 2014, diesel prices were well over $4 a gallon, and that came out to about $18 per acre inch to pump using diesel fuel. So either way, if we look at some of our larger farmers or a couple of farms across, if we were irrigating 1,000 acres and we only applied 10 inches to that 1,000 acres, that's going to cost us approximately $100,000 just to move that water and energy cost. And that's assuming we're 50% diesel, 50% electric. And that's from the new numbers at 7 and 1250 are the numbers that we've agreed to use at UGA Extension this year. We've talked about for the 2019 years. We go to our meetings and stuff. So, keep that in mind. It's water's free, but it's expensive to move that water and to get it to that crop. So we want to make sure we're as efficient with it and hit the critical timing and all as possible. Irrigation scheduling. So I've just got a snapshot of the Southeast, and I'm going to go through the slide really quick. What I see and what I point out here very, very quickly is that basically 90% of our producers answered this survey and said that they schedule irrigation via visible stress. So that tells me that they're, I'm going to call that almost shooting by the hip, right? That we don't really have a scientific method that we feel like we're doing besides looking out at that crop. And if you're very astute and you look down through there, you notice that those do add up over 100%. All that means is that certain producers answered that they use more than one method. So a guy may use visible stress, and then he'll go out and check the soil and see where he thinks he's at or something along the lines of that. Is that clear to everyone? So either way, we're extremely low on using services and soil moisture sensors all across the Southeast and even across the nation. So we have to find a way to increase that amount. So the main goal of this project, we're trying to educate, first off, our agents. And so, as Lori was talking about, we work very strongly in the state of Georgia on the county delivery system. And I would be remiss if I didn't make sure I told you that. I'm a faculty member in the Crop Soil Science Department and Ag Engineer, and an extension specialist. But I work very closely with our agents in each county to take and get information out to our farmers. That's just how it works in Georgia. We were very fortunate to have agents in every county. So we wanted to educate our agents, first of all, on the utilization of this tool, and then through that, educate the producers on the utilization of advanced irrigation scheduling tools. And, you know, in this case, we'll talk about a few more, but in this case, I'm going to state soil moisture sensors to aid them become more efficient, sustainable, and conservative irrigated agricultural production in the state of Georgia. So we say the secondary objectives, we're going to implement, I'm not going to call it a full countywide, but implement soil moisture sensors at the farm level to educate producers on their usage. So one thing is to get these things in the guy's hands and let them basically have a test drive with them and see what they can do for them, you know, from the perspective of just using them, getting the data, how we make decisions from that data on a daily basis, and then what that does from us from the perspective of irrigation management during the season and then at the end of the year. We wanted to work with the farmers to refine the usage of the sensors. So if there's, you know, something going on, they're not comfortable with them, something out there, if we need to tweak how we make recommendations with them for particular scenarios or areas, we would do that. And then this has become the hardest one of all, even though it seems very easy, but determine the increase in water use efficiency from implementations of the sensors. And I said increase in there because that's what we hope for. The little bit of data I got this year, and I think all of you are familiar, we've got a lot of rain this year and continue to get a lot of rain. The data I've got so far doesn't look too great because we got so much rain, you really didn't need to irrigate much this year. And so it's kind of hard when you do an irrigation study and you can't delineate treatments. You know, go search soil moisture sensor on Google. We were talking about searching other stuff on Google earlier. And try to pick some. That was, I'm not going to say that's where we started because we had a lot of avenues a lot of options already available to us, but, you know, it's kind of hard. It can be intimidating to the new farmer wanting to jump into soil moisture sensors. You know, where do we start? Which one do we pick? You search it on Google and see what you get. You get a lot of really cheap ones, get a lot of really expensive ones, and then some in between. And so what do you want on your farm? What do you need, et cetera? We just so happen to have a startup company out of Atlanta, Georgia. We've been working with them for a few years now. And we chose them. It's called Trellis. And a few reasons. I mean, they're based out of Atlanta, Georgia. You know, why not? We're doing a local project. Why not support a local? They are Georgia Tech grads, but that's all right. Support a local company that's, like I said, a startup there. They've been extremely flexible over the life of that company with us. Since they are a startup, I've been very impressed with, one, their customer support. And two, when we make a recommendation to them on something that we don't like with web portal sensors, et cetera, for the most part, they make those changes and make it, well, we say, more user-friendly, easier to use in the field, et cetera. And so that's been kind of nice to, I would say, kind of have that hand to keep the system that we're working with now going in the right direction. And they, for right now, for what's on the market, they're a cheaper cost relatively. And I can tell you that a little, I'm going to talk about that now. We did two sensors, and I'll go deeper into that in a second, but it's about $450 per probe in the field, if that tells you where that's at. If you know cost ranges of probe-style soil moisture sensors, they're going to range from around that up to $2,000, $2,500 per site in the field. So you kind of heard Jesse talk about this a little bit earlier. We selected 11 counties in the state of Georgia. You can kind of see we're divided in four districts there, and that's only our two. That's our Southwest and Southeast district. You can see them highlighted in red and black accordingly. And just for time's sake, but I'm not going to spend too much time on here, but I would, again, I don't see any of them in the room right now, but throw out a great appreciation to these agents who stepped up and volunteered and worked with us through this project. You can kind of see them there and see the counties. That was 2017. And what we selected was there's 22 fields total, two per county. So they were responsible for meeting most, a couple of them, it was the same farmer. We suggested that they pick two different farmers in that county and work with them. So 2018, we had a few changes. We had a couple agents that just happened to leave, take other positions, some other stuff. So we moved around just a little bit. You can see there's not a lot of a change there, but same thing, still 22 fields, two per county, and this is a cotton meeting, but I wanted to pitch in that last year we did add eight peanut fields in with that, some work that Adam and I got funded for, and so we're still expanding to other crops as we move forward with this project. So worked with the farmer and the agent to decide where to put these sensors. You know, that's another critical issue. How do we, you give these guys these tools, where do we put them in the field? So it's kind of like, you know, some of the agents would send us soil maps, some of them would send us aerial maps, some of them had it figured out, et cetera. You know, but we worked with them and said, you know, we want to put them in dynamically different areas in the field where we feel like still represent the field as a whole. There were three soil moisture sensor sites per field based on that producer knowledge and agent's experience. As each node, I told you this earlier, had two sensor depths, 6-inch and 14-inch. That's a sensor installed in the field you see there to the right. And what you can't see, if you see that black line, let me back up, that's actually the wireless radio that talks back to the base station you see. But if you see the kind of the black cord or black line there, that goes down to the sensor that's installed under the ground. And you saw one of the watermark probes that Jesse showed earlier that has a green on each end and silver band around it. There's two of those integrated in that probe down there at those appropriate depths. We just worked with them on scheduling irrigation. So I worked with the agents and said we need to trigger irrigation on a weighted average of 40 to 50 kilopascals. And the nice thing is I've got some graphs up there from different fields. We're not going to go too deep in them. But the software actually highlights based on what soil type you tell it that it's been installed in, kind of a blue that you're saturated, a green you're good, and a yellow to red that you're dry until you better irrigate yesterday format. So it was really nice on how it showed the producers they should irrigate. But we also talked to them on why that is. As we went through the growing season, I think something that we don't realize and a lot of people don't when they use systems like this, and I got lots of phone calls when cotton hit bloom, if you've ever scheduled irrigation on it, it's like we're cruising along, we're doing all right, not using water, then all of a sudden it jumps in and starts drinking it like crazy, and that's kind of some of the stuff you see on these graphs, and so we get some panic happening. So I think our producers that work with this and our agents that work with it really got what I would say is a hands-on, more thorough understanding of that crop water use interrelationship that happens there. You know, before it's like, all right, well, we're getting into bloom, we'll just turn the pivot on a couple times a week. But when you start monitoring what's going on down there, it really surprises you, you know, what's happening. All right, so I'm going to go anecdotal. And that's the whole presentation for me. That's what I feel like this is. It's kind of what I hope we've taught, what our guys have learned, and how we can move into the future with some of this data. So the first year, we asked them to run an app developed at the University of Georgia, and a smart irrigation cotton app along with it, just to show them that an app model could work just as well. Well, I'll tell you, they said that was too much. They said it was just too confusing, too cumbersome, too much to keep up with, and they didn't want to do that anymore. So if any of you are extension specialists out there to work with your agents, if you're smart, you'll listen to them. So we said, okay, we won't make you do that. First year, I had some rain gauges that I purchased for another project, and for money savings reason, I provided all those to these guys. It was just on their own Decagon data loggers, I think that's right, and I provided them all the cords, all this stuff, and I got like four back at the end of the year and not really any data. Some of them got run over, some of them, I don't know what happened. They said it was too much work to go out to the field, download the data periodically, all this stuff, and so that was a headache. We learned from that. So we did. I was so impressed with this, and we got feedback from almost every agent out there that they felt more confident in those soil moisture sensors than they did in any of the models or anything else we could provide to them, that they would rather use those than an app or a model or something out there. And it's kind of like a little thumbs up to us. I was like, you know what, we just made them feel good about using a tool and about implementing it. So they felt like they were reliable and they represented exactly what was happening in the field. However, when we put stuff out in the field, any equipment, what happens in an ag scenario? We're going to have failures, whether that's due to, I should have put the picture in here. This past year, I get a text from an agent like a week after he installed it and said, what am I supposed to do about this? And it was the rain gauge crushed by the pivot. I was like, man, I was like, how? You should have played the lottery that day, because he had a whole field to pick. He put that rain gauge out there, and it ran. He picked right where that pivot track walked around through there. He said he thought he stepped it off and had everything like perfect. And he had it perfect. I don't know how he could have done any better. So either way, he'd be all right if he's here. I could pick on him about it a little bit. But stuff like that happens in the field. And my point is, when we have an equipment issue, it better be resolved as soon as possible, especially when we're looking at water management and when we're in a critical time in the year. So if we don't get that, man, your farmers are going to be happy. Agent's not going to be happy. We got to figure out what's going on. And we did have some stuff that some of them could go out and fix. There were some sensor resets and stuff like that. But then there was some mechanical damage, some failed boards. Hey, what else do we have in the middle of summer in production fields? Usually a lot of lightning and thunderstorms. What's electronics going to do when we get lightning strikes out there? We're usually going to fry those guys. So stuff like that happens. We just got to get it fixed, back up and running. All right, 18. We only ask them to use the app for logging during 2018. We work with a company and integrated a Davis rain gauge, if you're familiar with those, with one of the sensors in the field. So we had three sensors. One of them now had a rain gauge attached to it. Now I've integrated the data fully, graphed it back on the same graph that we were pulling in the soil water tension data. That took away the need to go to the field to download that data. That also took away the need for matching up that data and some of the record keeping that they needed to do. We still had a little bit of issues with sensors failing every now and then and some mechanical damage and all that. So either way, so I ask, and I won't give away my methods, but, you know, you just got to figure out how to get this data out of these guys, right? You know, go buy them a beer or whatever. I didn't say that, right? Just sit down and get them to be honest with you about what we need to do and what we need to change. You know, what I need to do. And I'm going to say these are some of my thoughts from running this project and trying to figure out how to manage it. Y'all do the math. We had over 100 sensors out in the field this past year. I didn't have any gray, like, anywhere. And now, like, my sides are gray everywhere after this past 6 or 8 months or something from this project. It's making me old quick. But, you know, when we start managing at that level and teaching these guys this stuff in a different way, like Lori's talking about, she talked about teaching, well, I would say that this is outreach and extension and education from a totally different perspective, right? I can sit down and talk all day, like she said up here, about a soil moisture sensor, even let you pass one around the room, but you really don't understand till you put it in the field. So I've sat down with a lot of them and just informally, what do we need to do? Where are we at? And I've made, you know, inferences and thoughts from this. So, you know, soil moisture sensors require a lot higher level of management than irrigating following a weekly schedule or checkbook. And when I walk around and ask a lot of our producers, that's kind of what they do now across our state. They just say, first part of the season, since we're talking about cotton, I'll irrigate once a week at about an inch of event. When we get close to bloom, I'll kick that up to twice a week, maybe three times a week for not getting much rain. That's it. That's what they do. That's just how it rolls. And so we put a sensor out in that field. All of a sudden, you got another level of management that's sitting there that we've got to make a decision off of. So some of the agents and producers embraced it and were really okay with the extra time. Some didn't, and they wanted a more automated and simplistic method. And the lucky thing, if we ever get the federal government back up and running, there's a software program out of the Peanut Lab in Dawson, Georgia, that actually we'll take this data, and they've been working with some companies. Trellis is one of the companies, one of the first ones that's worked with them, but the data will automatically populate into a software program called Irrigator Pro. And all it does for you is it makes the decisions for you. I'm not going to go any deeper into it. If you got questions about that, let me know. But all you got to do is tell it your radio ID, basically, or your login, and it's done. Stuff like that is where we have to move to. I'll tell you nowadays for our producers, so they don't have to sit down and make decisions like this. We've got a couple of producers in the state of Georgia that manage over 100 pivots on a daily basis. Tell me how much time they can actually dedicate that to that on a daily basis and make decisions. Not a lot. All right. Equipment failures always cause lack of confidence in the system. Man, it doesn't matter what it was because of, how good it worked. That one negative, right, that one rotten apple always causes problems. So we just got to figure out, if we have it, we got to figure out how to get it back up, running as soon as possible, and make these systems as bulletproof as possible. For ease of system use, both agents and producers want the rain gauge system to be integrated. I told you that. Now we've got it there. You know, that's what they wanted. We made it happen. This helps. Any system we're going to put out there, if you could get that live data back with it, does a couple of things for you. One, it's a record keeper. That's basic, right? And if you put it under your pivot, it's also a record keeper of how much you applied, how well you're, you know, if you're, to be honest, your pivot efficiency or how much your pivot is applying every time. But beyond that, it also tells you what happens when we get a inch rainstorm event, or we apply 3/4 of an inch irrigation event, whatever. Let's talk about that for a minute. What does that do to my soil moisture? How fast do my plants use it? We really start to better understand that interrelationship there of applied water to the field from catching that rain bucket to what it did, you know, to my soil moisture sensor, and then how fast my plants use it. We did develop, or the company developed, an app for viewing the sensors, and I want to tell you what, everybody loved it. They liked that they didn't have to. Originally, this system, we had to sit down at a computer or a mobile platform on the phone. They loved being able to, anytime they're in the field, riding down the road, whatever, open it up, check their sensors, see where they're at, make a decision. I mean, I think after we look back, we're like, well, why didn't we have the app first and then go to that, right? You know, Lori talked about social media. Apps and stuff are where we're moving to. We were always in the truck. We're always on the road. We're always on the go now. Everybody, easier access to data is what we need. My thoughts. So you can't repeat like any of this, right, because it might get me in trouble. That's why I changed the title up there. But strictly, I'm going to say this is just like where I'm at. Soil moisture sensors are a very useful tool. They aid producers in increasing irrigation water use efficiency and yield in some cases. We use them. They should work, right? And I can't say in all cases. Hey, what's a big hindrance? Cost, right? We don't want to pay that for them. I don't have any economics really here. You see how expensive it is to irrigate. It's just as expensive to mess up irrigating. If we don't time it right, we cause yield losses, we cause other problems, we're going to have issues. Sensors require higher management intensity than calendar and checkbook methods. I mean, come on, we just got to put the time in. You can't expect to buy one, stick it in the field, and it's just going to magically make a difference for you, correct? Field durability is a must. You know, again, I've covered some of these, but I went back. I think two more slides and I'm done, Lori. I've only used like half the break. The benefit of irrigation overrides the need for technology. So let's think about that for just a second. How many producers have you talked to when we've put an advanced technology on an irrigation system, I don't care what it is, it starts failing, what are they going to do? They're going to shut that advanced technology off and turn that irrigation system on as soon as possible when they feel like they need irrigation. Don't care about the technology. So they're going to default back to something to get water to that crop. They feel like this technology is not doing what it's supposed to, throw it in the trash immediately. I've seen that time and time and time again. And it's that one bad apple that comes up. When you're going to do this, and I'm not knocking any of the companies out there. There's a lot of great soil moisture sensor companies out there and irrigation scheduling companies. You have to have tapers. You've got to have local support. You can't be talking to somebody that's halfway across the nation or in another country or somewhere else. You need somebody within very, very short driving distance if something goes down, or within a good call that'll answer the phone. You're not going through this customer support crap that we have to go through with some of our other issues, right? A good interface for viewing and using the data. Don't make that confusing. You know, if we go in there and just crap everywhere and it's cluttered and it doesn't make sense, can't make any decisions from it. I'm an engineer and I like looking at graphs and doing all that stuff. I don't mind sitting down and following through and picking stuff out of them. Our farmers do not want to do that. They want yes, no like that when they look at it, right? All right. Good information support for when to trigger the irrigation events. We have to prove the on-farm level return on investment, reliability, and ease of use, and we're working on some of that now. You're going to hear from Adam just after me. I'm not sure if he's covering that here, but we're working together on some of that work and some of our other economists there. So soil moisture sensor adoption is possible on a wide scale, and by wide scale, statewide here, nationwide, wherever. And maybe we move beyond sensors. We talked about sensors here, but maybe there's something else but advanced irrigation scheduling. Maybe I should use that terminology there. We need as much automation and ease of use as possible. I've said this 2 or 3 times. I'm going to come straight out and say it. Farmers are busy, and we don't need something else to take up more of their time. But we do need something to make daily decisions easier and more automated. All right, these are, again, my thoughts from these personal experiences. Don't take them as fact unless you just think I'm like the end-all, do-all expert. I don't think that's the case. But this is just from what we've got from the 2 years of this project. And the adoption of advanced irrigation scheduling techniques are the best way to increase irrigation sustainability. And we'll say that. And by that, not necessarily sensors. There's a lot of other techniques, tools, technologies out there that we can use. So I want to thank all our agents. That's the list of them that worked on this project. They've been stellar. I mean, we put them through a lot of crap this project. If you only knew, I'm sure they cussed me behind my back, but it is what it is. So, and then the farmers in each county, they've also been very patient and worked with us really, really well on this project. I've been very, very impressed with how they've worked with us in the state. So, there's my contact information up top. Had to slip that slide in so I could keep up with Lori on social media. There's our Facebook and Twitter, both at Georgia Precision Ag. Try to update some of the stuff and all that we're doing on a regular basis. So if you'd like to follow our program or anything we do, feel free.